The most organic place to spend time is get customers. And the reason for that is it's the thing that enables growth. And it's also the thing that helps continue to fuel the two-sided network. And I think if you look at PayPal relative to any of the peer set, the global reach that we have from a consumer and merchant base is really unparalleled. And in the States, we have obviously two properties, both PayPal and Venmo, and the ability to really convert those users into ultimate consumers for our merchants is pretty meaningful. And so we spend a lot of our time thinking about ways in which we can create incremental synergies between the consumer and the merchant. And in the process, some of the solutions also create efficiency for the merchants.
Welcome to the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, powered by Gusto. On this show, we explore the intersection of fintech, vertical SaaS, and how software combats the rising complexity of running a business. Our goal is to share stories, advice, and best practices from the leaders and investors behind today's cutting-edge platforms. This episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast is brought to you by Gusto Embedded. Gusto has spent a decade building and testing its payroll, tax filing, and compliance infrastructure, which is available as a robust set of APIs so you can develop custom-tailored payroll solutions. For more information, go to embedded.gusto.com. Here's your host, Brian Bush.
On this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, my guest is Michelle Gill, EVP and General Manager of the Small Business and Financial Services Group at PayPal, a global payments provider that's been revolutionizing commerce for over 25 years. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Brian.
I'm excited to dive into this one. But first, let's anchor the audience just a little bit. Your career spans significant roles at Goldman Sachs, SoFi, Intuit, and now PayPal. So let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the key leadership lessons you've learned from this diverse experience.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for asking. And thanks again for having me on today. I'd say I not only learn leadership lessons, but also life lessons through all these roles. And I'll be throwing out some of what may seem like very cliche things that you've probably heard in your past, but I think do very much so hold true. The first of which is, I'd say execution needs strategy for breakfast every day. Strategy, incredibly important, but broadly speaking, always bet on people that can help you execute, who are willing to dive in, get their hands dirty, roll up their sleeves, and really facilitate getting to the end state, not just thinking up of the best strategy. The second thing I'd say is, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're probably in the wrong room. One thing that has been immensely career defining for me is always having that feeling of insecurity when you're in a room and you're like, wow, every single one of these people is smarter than I am, and they all know what they're talking about. The things that I love about that is it always challenges you to think in new ways and think about things that are bigger than the way that you walked into that room. And I think it really helps you think more broadly than you probably would have otherwise. And lastly, and probably most recently quoted, is life is bigger than the court. And when Roger said this, Federer, for anybody who did not see his remarks at Dartmouth, the first thing he said is never forget where you came from. And I think being true to yourself and allowing people to see you for who you really are is incredibly important. It's very humanizing and it makes you incredibly relatable. And the second thing is, make sure that when you're thinking about your goals at a professional level, you don't forget about your personal goals as well. Nobody wants to be remembered for that last thing that they achieved at work. People want to be remembered for the broader person that they were in our entire environment. And that means think about not just what you're doing, but also how you're doing it. And not just how is it benefiting you, but how is it benefiting the people around you, both in the context of the customers you serve, the people that work with you, the people that work for you, and the people that you work for. This is advice that isn't just true at a senior level, it's true at every level. And so I think it's really interesting because I think your work life takes up so much of your life that whenever people ask you about leadership lessons, you so often hearken back to the leadership lessons that you take from work. But honestly, I would say now having two girls, many of my leadership lessons have been taken from my family affairs rather than just exclusively work.
Oh my goodness, that's a wonderful way to start this conversation. First, execution needs strategy. Second, don't be the smartest person in the room. And third, life is bigger than the court. I just love the way that you summed that up, Michelle. That's a great way to start. Let's turn to who PayPal is a little bit. And I think many folks listening to the show will have some idea, probably have been a user at some point in time. But let's actually dive into PayPal knows the challenges that small businesses face and that customers expect these days, especially how they pay across so many channels. Please, let's dive into the heart of who PayPal is. Tell us a little bit about the breadth of PayPal's offerings for SMBs. And specifically, there's a new release, as I understand, PayPal Complete Payments. So let's touch on that as well.
I love that you asked this question. Obviously, as the GM of small business, I have a lot of passion for small businesses. But if you think about the roots of PayPal and you think about the fact that it really all started with eBay, which is a marketplace for small sellers, that's really how PayPal got its start. Today, many people think of PayPal when you shop online at very large merchants and you press the yellow button, and consumers know PayPal incredibly well because it has been a trusted brand through which they haven't had to enter their credit card. They haven't had to give it to all of these merchants who they don't know. They don't feel as though their credentials have been compromised, et cetera. But really, our larger merchant base continues to be the small business base, and it is an incredibly important constituent to serve. It is one of the hardest constituents to serve as well, because small businesses come in all shapes and sizes. Yes, they are smaller than large enterprise, but they can be as small as the person who does lawn care at your home to an in-store seller that has both an online presence as well as a store. And it is incredibly complicated to be able to serve all of those needs. And yet so many of them have chosen PayPal to really start their journey with. And so as you think about the way that we've really framed the small business ecosystem is through five jobs to be done. The first of which is get customers, because that's really what facilitates small business growth. The second of which is get paid. The third of which is pay vendors. The fourth is manage cash flow. And the fifth is run operations. And we today are incredibly well known for get paid. Yet through our two-sided network, particularly with the habituation and ubiquity that we do have with consumers, get customers is so easily a problem that we can help solve, as well as through all the data that we collect from the merchants and the consumers that transact through those merchants to help them understand how to optimize which consumers they should be focused on. And so what we're excited about is by undertaking this jobs to be done framework, we know we've done incredibly well on the get paid side, and it's really what brings merchants to PayPal. But what we really want to do is help both facilitate small business growth through get customers and also simplify operations through the last three jobs to be done that I enumerated. In terms of PayPal Complete Payments, just to get to that part of your question, historically, when a merchant integrated or a small business integrated with PayPal, if you wanted to adopt an incremental solution, that was another integration. And that was more time, more headache, more things to think about. You actually had to weigh your option of, should I do this? Should I not do this? How much time is it going to take? What's the uplift? Do I even understand it? And oh, by the way, I have 50 other things that I need to do. And so what we've done now is through a single integration, you can actually adopt all of the products that we offer under one umbrella. Mm-hmm. And that's really important for small businesses because it really does help them be able to achieve both what they're trying to achieve, which is incremental efficiency, as well as with a click of a button, being able to adopt that incremental product. And so we're really excited about this offering because we think that it meets the customer where they are, and it doesn't have them having to think about the incremental solution that they may need, but rather as they are growing, they can literally click a button and adopt it.
I love this trend. I think we hear this often on the show, but I guess so this goes to the core of what we believe. How can we just solve more pain for small business owners? And as you mentioned, adding an incremental product or an incremental payment channel often adds complexity. So I just want to understand one very functional detail. You said with one integration, they can now access more of PayPal's solution offering. Integration with what? Is that with a commerce platform they're using? Is that with a point of sale platform? When you say integration with one integration, what exactly are you referring to on the other side of that?
Yeah, and great question. I'm glad you asked. So PayPal Complete Payments, people think of as a quote unquote platform. It's not actually a platform. What we actually decided to do is we built a bunch of microservices, and then we built a single integration pattern through which you can adopt all of the microservices. And so each one of those microservices continues to operate. And historically, you had to adopt each one of those microservices as a point solution. Rather than having single point solution, we still believe we have best in class microservices, and we have the ability to not have them have latency, et cetera, because they're structured just in that way. They feed off a single data repository. They feed into a single data repository. So they're built commensurate with the platform, but instead of being an actual end-to-end platform, you can elect to only adopt certain pieces of the microservice or microservices, but do so through a single integration pattern. So it's really, that's what PayPal Complete Payments is. Our latest offering that we're offering with PayPal Complete Payments is something that we call Fastlane. We're really excited to be debuting. And that is really, if you look at where the preponderance of merchants lose consumers, it's at the checkout, and specifically because they don't want to log in. And so we've now created Fastlane, which is a way to capture guests at guest checkout. And we're seeing with the beta merchants that we have on there, pretty incredible data insofar as uplifts in conversion and reduced time to checkout, as well as reduced drop-off. I believe our reduced time to checkout has been reduced by about 32%, which is pretty amazing and something we're really proud of. And again, if you integrate through PayPal Complete Payments, which is again, the latest integration pattern, you have the ability to click on Fastlane, which is just the latest example of something that we're bringing to market.
Yeah. And 32%, I feel like that, to your point, can seem underwhelming to folks who don't live in this world and understand the lingo. Personally, as somebody who, one of those users, one of those consumers who does like paying with PayPal, because I don't want to have to enter my credit card information again for a new website that I may not have purchased with before, that 32% may not feel like something, but for the merchant, that's huge in terms of what it means for conversions, additional sales, not losing, avoiding some of the drop-off pieces that come with that.
And that's separate and apart from just the conversion uplift that we're seeing, and we're seeing up to 50% better than non-Fastlane users and so far as the conversion uplift. And as we know, consumers today are so easily distracted by so many different things when you're trying to complete a transaction with the pop-ups and the this and the that. Mm-hmm. So getting them through the flow faster is to the merchant's benefit. And quite honestly, it's to the consumer's benefit as well. The consumer wants to be in and out and wants to know that that's a seamless purchase, and they want to get that immediate gratification of that email that tells them, okay, your order's gone through, you're good, it's coming on X date, et cetera. And some of the things we're really excited about are the ability to have shipping tracking and all these other things that really enable the consumer to feel as though they have the control back versus feeling like, I don't remember, did I order that? Did I not order that? I have to go back through my emails to check if I got a confirmation email. I don't remember exactly, like I didn't get that order yet. And again, I think all of these things are pain points that we've all felt as consumers that we're really trying to solve. And when we say we're solving them for consumers, the shadow side of that is anything we don't solve basically leads to a merchant call, basically asking about an order. And that's not the most productive call. And so the ability to surface that data in a way that's usable to the consumer, that's what we're really going for.
Michelle, I think you already started to touch on it. I want to take a small step back. Talk to us a little bit about the trends you were hearing from the businesses in the market in general. What was the why behind investing in this product offering and obviously the new product launch? What were the trends that you were hearing from merchants who use PayPal?
A couple different things. First and foremost, broadly speaking, expenses for small businesses are going up. And if you think about it, that's predicated on a couple different things. First, inflation, as we all know. So the supply side of anything that they're selling is going up. Second, marketing and advertising costs have also been going up as a lot of the largest merchants in the market are really eating up on the ad space and ad dollars. And it's becoming less and less viable for small businesses to really be able to facilitate growth through marketing. And so with that, and the fact that during the pandemic, there was this huge rise in e-com, and or e-commerce, and all of these merchants saw immense growth that they are now, that they invested into, and they now need to be able to replicate in a very different environment. All of those things. And then on top of it, you think about all the things going on in the consumer landscape, wherein consumers have been more and more concerned about data privacy with all of the hacking and credential attacks, et cetera, that have been going on. You've got a situation where, you know, for e-commerce in particular, consumers have been going back in store rather than shopping online. And again, it's been harder to grow the consumer base, generally speaking. And so what we saw is just a real need for merchants to have a way, SMBs in particular, to have a way to capture the consumers that are coming through, make sure they don't lose them, have more repeat transactions. And so when we launched most of the offerings associated with Quantum Leap, of which Fastlane is one, they were really geared toward being able to solve some of those problems that we just talked about. So if you think about it, Fastlane is one aspect, which is really increasing conversion. But some of the other aspects were things like smart receipts. The things that were important to us in the context of smart receipts was being able to, at the bottom of a receipt, be able to tell someone that for a repeat transaction, they could get a discount or market them on the next product or put in a referral code for friends or turn a shampoo order into a subscription. All things which really increase repeat buyer experiences. Even the shipping and transaction monitoring, as we talked about in the context of trying to know exactly where your package is, et cetera, there are multiple use cases for that. So first, it reduces cost, right? Because a lot of people did not find their packages. All of a sudden, you're getting a picture of where your package is. And guess what? It got delivered to your next door neighbor, or there was piracy associated with your package. And so it really reduced that aspect. It also, as a result, reduced people charging back. And lastly, again, all of the questions around when am I getting that item also went away. So I think on each frame, we thought about it both from a cost reduction, incremental efficiency for the merchant, better experience for the consumer, and also more repeat usage between the consumer and the merchant.
So maybe a follow-up, and Michelle, I think this comes back to the five key jobs to be done that you mentioned at the outset. And I forgive me, you're going to have to repeat them. I think I got 3 out of 5, but more, if I look at what PayPal offers, obviously several financial products, not just taking payments, there's cards, there's working capital offers, but you mentioned there are a number of products that help solve operational pains. There's some risk management, reporting. You just mentioned some of the shipping and invoicing, the smart receipts. I guess I'm a little bit curious how you think about allocating time, effort, product development, new releases on the get customers get paid versus solve operational challenges, which I think had 3 different jobs to be done within it. Are you explicitly putting priority or focus on those 2 rough buckets? Is it more organic based on the trends you're hearing from and needs from customers at any given time? If we take a small step back and you think about new investments and adding new products, how do you think about where you want to spend time going forward with PayPal?
I think the most organic place to spend time is get customers. And the reason for that is it's the thing that enables growth. And it's also the thing that helps continue to fuel the two-sided network. And I think if you look at PayPal relative to any of the peer set, the global reach that we have from a consumer and merchant base is really unparalleled. And in the States, we have obviously 2 properties, both PayPal and Venmo, and the ability to really convert those users into ultimate consumers for our merchants is pretty meaningful. And so we spend a lot of our time thinking about ways in which we can create incremental synergies between the consumer and the merchant. And in the process, some of the solutions also create efficiency for the merchants. And so let's just take, as I mentioned, the tracking information that creates an efficiency for the merchant while also creating incremental synergy between and ability to dialogue between the consumer and the merchant. That being said, I think as you look at different size merchants have different needs. And so at the smaller end, they have operational needs as well as get customer needs. At the larger end, the preponderance of their needs are really on the operational side, less so on get customers. They tend to have that one better dialed in on their own. It varies pretty meaningfully depending on the business type, the business size. For service-based businesses, if you think about it, which is a lot of our Venmo businesses and then the smaller side of the PayPal businesses, they are most constrained by time. And so some of the things that we've been thinking about, particularly in the context of Gen AI, is how do you create the Gen AI scheduling app that helps facilitate ensuring that they are at 100% capacity at all times. If someone cancels a haircut that's scheduled at 4 p.m. at 9 a.m., but they're back to back all day and they can't get that rescheduled because they wouldn't even know to look, right? That's missed revenue opportunities for that service provider. And again, as we think about it, get customers always ends up being the thing that is the single most important, but it comes with having to solve operational problems to facilitate getting that incremental customer, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. And I just want to reiterate, you didn't say fintech, but I do feel like great, I'll say fintech or embedded fintech, it connects the dots between those financial transactions and something operational. And I think you're making the point really well that, hey, helping grow customers can also mean saving costs and operational hassle or support calls on the back end. Like, it is a great example of the win side that comes with this. So Michelle, you actually mentioned a couple of things, and I want to dig just a little bit deeper on the operational side. You mentioned consumers are coming back to brick and mortar. And so I'm actually very curious because PayPal does offer an in-store point of sale offering through the Zettle acquisition. These days, there are a lot of companies that are trying to verticalize, say, a point of sale operation. I'm thinking Toast for restaurants, Lightspeed for golf courses. And I'm actually very curious because I know PayPal offers some very robust industry-specific sort of solutions at the enterprise level. Are you feeling a pull from customers and need, whether it's competitive or just demand from your merchants, to provide more of a vertical-specific spin on some of these product offerings?
Yeah, great question. I think when you look at it, we absolutely have a physical point of sale. We also have other capabilities that we are bringing to bear, particularly for the smaller businesses in the context of QR codes for all businesses that tap to pay. And the thing that we're really focused on is how do we ensure that consumers have the ability to use the instruments they want in the way they want in every store. And we're much more focused on the hardware is one piece of it. And we want the ability to have hardware that we can offer that's end-to-end. But it's as critical to us that we have the ability to ingest that want to bring their own hardware and that places that have decided to verticalize, we can keep up with them in the context of what they need from a payments, working capital, and all the other solutions that we can bring to bear. So we've been spending actually a lot of time with various point of sale providers who probably don't have as strong a consumer base, trying to ensure that we can actually bring our consumer base to the table for them, be in a situation where those consumers can be habituated to the likes of some of the larger offerings that you've talked about, and do so in such a way that it allows the consumer to get the best of both, which is the specific verticalized solution that the merchant in that particular space may have chosen, but with their PayPal ID, their PayPal credentials, and similarly with the ability that if they would like, they can actually, because it's an experience-based offering that often can be at a higher price point, how can they have the ability to BNPL that? Or how can they undertake some of the other offerings and have them all streamlined into a single offering? So I think it's important that we have capabilities across the board to serve different sized players, but the types of capabilities that we'll bring to bear in each instance will be incredibly different. We don't need to compete head to head with the verticalized offerings. Rather, we'd like to partner with them to flex our relative strengths.
I love that. It's not either or, it can be a both and at different times. Right. So Michelle, a little bit, I want to say with your, take your product hat off by any means, but let's definitely put your revenue leader hat on for a second. We know that especially as you roll out new products, especially fintech products, we don't want to lean on a build it and they will come sort of assumption. You actually have to work to drive adoption of these products. So as you look at some of the new offerings that you've rolled out recently, maybe what tactics have you found successful to drive awareness first, but then of course, adoption of some of these new product offerings?
Yeah, so a lot of our builds recently, let's just take PayPal Complete Payments as a good example. We co-built that with a partner. And what I mean when I say that is not like at the end of the day, we didn't work and have somebody else develop it on our code or anything like that, but rather we took a particular partner's requirements that was an international partner that had global reach so that we knew we were not just canvassing US needs or European needs and ensured that it was fit for purpose and that they could actually adopt it. It was an incredibly complex partner because we wanted to go with a more, the other thing that people often do is start with the simplest use case and then assume that they can grow. But if you actually build for the complex and you think through all the use cases of where you're trying to go, it makes it such that you can actually retrofit it for the more simple. And that is how we actually undertook that build. And we have partners that we are incredibly closely tied with, some of whom are actually beta partners in the Fastlane launch that we're really excited about. And we have really been hand in glove with them thinking about what are the pain points that their merchants are experiencing that we, PayPal, and that partner are bringing to bear. And so we've really tried to ensure that we're solving those pain points while also obviously solving for the direct merchants that are coming to us and making sure that we're bringing any of those lessons to the way in which we're architecting for the direct merchants.
Well, Michelle, we started with some incredible sort of leadership lessons. I feel like there's a little nugget in there that might be hiding, and that's, hey, in a world of minimum viable, minimum delightful, your idea of sometimes it makes sense to build for the more complex use case first, I think is obviously a judgment call, but a really interesting insight that probably gets lost on a lot of maybe earlier stage product leaders out there. Michelle, before I let you go, I'm sure we start with life lessons, but I want to wrap up with advice. I'm sure you get asked for advice, especially by emerging fintech leaders all the time, those looking to innovate, create new impactful solutions for small businesses. What are your favorite go-to pieces of advice for folks who want to be in your shoes someday?
Really understand your customers. I think that is the number one thing that you have to get right. And quite honestly, the things that you'll hear from your teams are so filtered. Speaking to your customers directly and understanding their feedback points and letting them really give you an unfiltered view and prodding them with questions of things that you're seeing in your funnel and making sure that you're really understanding, why is that product not getting adoption? Why are people not thinking about that in the same way that you thought about it when you launched? What is driving their behavior in a selection of this competitor versus your product? I think those are all really valuable. And what you'll find is if you admit what you perceive your weaknesses are to your customers, the willingness that they will have to open up to you is immense. I think at first, they're super shy to open up because they feel like they're talking to someone senior at the company and they want to make sure that they're saying all the right things about their customer service rep or whatever. But ultimately, if you just give them the room and the space to open up to you, I think you will find so many interesting things. And the other thing that I think that we all really miss in this day of online communication and work and everything else, I think if you had asked me what would our customers want in terms of community, I would have said, entirely an online community. And the thing that I found really interesting in meeting with a lot of customers, small businesses in particular recently, the desire for in-person events and the desire to collaborate and hear from people that are similarly situated, because I think being a small business owner can be incredibly lonely. And I hadn't really anticipated that. And so it was interesting because we all think about, oh, people are in different places. They want the flexibility. They want this. And so don't assume anything. Just ask. It was really interesting to hear a lot of the things that I would hardly have guessed would have been insights coming out from customer meetings.
Michelle, if I can double click on that one. So first, hear you entirely. And I love how the most senior leaders always come back to the basics. And in this case, it's understand your customer point of view, get it directly. You mentioned, hey, sometimes your team filters things, but I've got to assume that's not bad intent. Rather, that's your team trying to create a valid and a valuable synthesis of what they're hearing from the market. So how do you, as a senior leader, think about still getting very direct input from customers without feeling like you are undermining the team that you work with, in a sense?
Yeah, I think we encourage it at every level to get direct customer feedback. I think what ends up happening is every team is working on a piece of the product, right? And at the end of the day, they're seeing it from their particular point of view, or they're solving a particular pain point or problem at that time. And so they're reaching out for customer feedback. At a senior level, you just ask really high level questions. And so again, when it's filtered, it's not because of intent to your point. It's really just they were seeking a particular answer to a particular question. You just asked a really open-ended question and you got a lot of interesting feedback that had nothing to do with what anyone would have thought to ask about. And every time I go for a visit to any city in any country, I try to meet with customers because, again, I think it's great to hear from different size customers in different regions doing different things. And, you know, if you can make that part of spend a couple hours a month doing that, I think it will pay you back in spades.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today, sharing so many insights, the trends you're seeing, the new product releases. It's incredibly exciting. Before we wrap up, could you tell our listeners where, if they have additional questions or want to follow up on anything we touched on today, where they might be able to connect, say, on social media?
Yes, I'm incredibly active on LinkedIn. It's Michelle Gill and PayPal, obviously. And I look forward to hearing from a lot of people.
Fantastic. We will make a point to link to some of the product pages mentioned today, as well as, of course, your LinkedIn. Michelle, thank you again for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Thanks again for tuning into this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast. We'll make sure to link to any resources that were mentioned in today's show in the show notes. Please also feel free to leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcast or to connect with the Gusto Embedded team via LinkedIn. In particular, we'd love to hear any future guests you'd like us to have on the show. Thanks again for listening, and keep a lookout for the next episode.